welcome to Music Ally Focus with me, Music Ally's editor, Joe Sparrow. And in this episode, we're joined by Christine Barnum, CD Baby's chief revenue officer, and we're talking about music streaming fraud, how the company tries to spot it, and what the fraudsters are doing to try to avoid being detected. Now, each Music Ally Focus episode analyzes one meaningful music business story at a time. And so this podcast is going to be quick. It should take about the same amount of time as Deepak Sharma Bajagain could lick and stick 2,000 postage stamps. Deepak licked 70 stamps in 1 minute in 2021. And there's an important caveat for you stamp licking fans out there. One envelope was disqualified as the stamp fell off before the counting began. Now, talking of something that leaves a nasty taste in your mouth, Christine Barnum's job is a form of fraud whack-a-mole. She tries to spot suspicious streaming activity before paying rights holders. We talk about her and her team's efforts in fraud, trust, and safety from the perspective of a distributor, including how she defines streaming fraud, how widespread fraud really is, and what a distributor does to stop it. Let's go over to Christine now. So I am very happy to welcome to the Focus podcast, Christine Barnum, CD Baby's Chief Revenue Officer. Hello, Christine.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Pleasure. And we're going to talk about fraud, trust, and safety from the CD Baby perspective and your perspective with your forensic accounting background. But before we go into that, can you just give us some basic introductory stuff, who you are, what you do at CD Baby, please?
Sure. So like you said, I'm the Chief Revenue Officer. I've been with the company going on 18 years at this point, so it's been a minute. My background was in royalties and royalty auditing, and then I decided I was done with New York and came out to Portland with no hopes of ever working in the music industry again. But much to my surprise and delight, I found CD Baby. And so I ran our royalty processes for many years, and that kind of bled into overall general accounting. Then I watched season 2 of The Wire, if you haven't seen it.
No, it's my favorite season of The Wire, actually.
And that's what got me to study forensic accounting. So I went back to school for forensic accounting, got to follow the money. And then my role evolved in, you know, accounting, finance, royalty, fraud. And then I've had enough and I pivoted and now I'm the chief revenue officer. And so I focus on basically all the teams that generate revenue, whether it's product, which is our website, our platform, marketing, biz dev, and then I retained trust and safety just because it's my weird little passion.
That's a good story. And it takes us to my next question very neatly, which is, in that sort of official terminology, what does fraud, trust, and safety mean in layperson terms? And how does that connect to our topic here, which is streaming fraud?
Yeah, so, you know, when my trust and safety team was first kind of built out, we called it the fraud and abuse prevention team. And at the time we were like, okay, that works. But then we're like, oh, like that's kind of horrifying. And you know, and also a little bit limiting in a weird way, you know, fraud, it can have very specific definitions or meanings depending on who you're talking to. And so then we adopted the warm and fuzzier trust and safety name for our team. And it can be a little bit more encompassing. It can be looking at royalty reports for, you know, streaming abuse. It can be, you know, looking at account login behaviors for like anomalous behavior there, account takeover type of things. And so it's a little bit more all encompassing. It's a little bit less scary if you have to do like an outreach to someone. You're like, hi, I'm the head of, you know, fraud and abuse.
Yeah, abuse is a big word, isn't it? Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
I've heard that combination of words used in a few different places, and that seems to be the sort of agreed way of talking about it now. How do you define streaming fraud from the CD Baby perspective? What is it, and what are people trying to do?
Yeah, so streaming fraud, and you know, we use these terms kind of interchangeably a bit, but streaming fraud is any consumption listening behavior that is not natural. It's anything that it's like, did a human really go and listen to that track that many times? It's anything that just doesn't quite pass the smell test of like something seems a little bit off.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, anomalous behavior. It's atypical consumption patterns, whether it's the volume of streams, the volume of users, the geography where it's consumed. It's any variety of things that just seems a little bit off.
So how do you measure that in a sense? Because I can't be the only person who has played what a new song comes out and I love it immediately and I play it at what I would consider an unreasonable number of times in a row. So where is the line between someone being a little bit obsessive about a really good song or artist and behavior that is artificial?
For
sure. How do you define that?
Yeah, I mean, I have small children, so I know all about my Spotify feed being co-opted by whatever the latest Disney soundtrack is, listening to an unhealthy number of times. But that, at least you can tell the story. Like, you can build a narrative around it. It's like, oh, okay, it's always consumed this many times a day, a couple times a day. It's predictable.
It's at nighttime when they're sleeping.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like it's not being, consumed more times than you could possibly do as a single human. Like, you're not listening to more than 24 hours of music in a day. Right. It's really not continual. And so there's a variety of ways that we can spot it. It's also because we sit from a very unique perspective as a distributor. We kind of know what normal is for general consumption across all of the DSPs. And so we can see we know on average an artist is going to have, a smattering of earnings from a variety of sources. And, there might be overall preferences maybe they skew a little more Spotify, maybe a little more YouTube, whatever. But if it's all one and nothing anywhere else, it's like, oh, that doesn't look right.
So you can... So can you sort of essentially for a given artist, or maybe this is done algorithmically, but can you sort of for a given artist sort of say, well, we predict that your mix across all the DSPs is going to be this, this percentage here, this percentage here, and your earnings are roughly going to be this, unless, of course, you have a breakout hit and it's going to be this. Is that the way you look at it?
Yeah. And that's certainly something that my team does. Like, if they're auditing a report and they see a spike in an asset that maybe didn't have a lot of earnings previously, and all of a sudden it's like a massive amount of plays and a big payout, they'll look into it. And, they're very good at finding information online.
Right.
And they can be like, oh, it's trending on TikTok or whatever. And then again, it's about building that narrative.
How do you know the techniques of fraudsters? What are their techniques? What are their motivations for doing it? Because, if you stream a song a bunch of times, you make money, right? But surely the picture's a bit more complicated than that.
There's specific techniques that's beyond my skill set. Their creativity and endless, ways of finding some new way. Amazing. Credit to them. I wish that energy could be put to good. But it is what it is. We're here. It's almost always financial is the motivation, and it's like opportunity is there. It's digital. Who is it harming? On the surface, someone would be like, oh, it's not hurting anybody. No one's, there's not, it's not human trafficking or something atrocious. Yeah, right. It's like, it's music. But that gets into bigger questions about how it impacts the royalty calculation. It dilutes the royalty pool for everyone. And, that hurts artists. And I want to put a stop to that. The motivation is almost always money. And then for artists, especially if they're just starting out, they want to get past that hurdle of obscurity. And unfortunately there's lots of people out there that are more than happy to take a well-meaning artist's money and be like, oh, guaranteed plays, we'll get you on this playlist, we'll get you all this stuff. And it's like, there's a big part of my trust and safety team and our support team in general that's about educating artists. Like, if it sounds too good to be true, it's probably too good to be true. And if you pay for that service, odds are you're going to get your content pulled.
You're sitting in, a unique position as CD Baby, as a distributor, and you're seeing data in all directions. So let's think of a hypothetical instance of fraud where a song's numbers are being juiced on a platform. How does it affect the different stakeholders? Specifically, we've got artists, we've got rights holders, we've got the DSPs, we've got and their partners, we've got maybe brands, we've got CD Baby itself. You mentioned there that artists, for instance, they may unwittingly pay someone to boost their song and commit fraud, essentially, and that can have a negative effect, and the song can be pulled, and they're getting punished in that way. But what are the other effects? For instance, on artists, you know, you mentioned there that if fraud is taking a piece of money out here, what's the impact on other artists who are not committing fraud?
Exactly. So I mean, everyone that you just mentioned, it impacts them. You know, the ESPs are impacted because, you know, they've got their slice of the royalty pool that they're going to be divvying up. And like that pool isn't getting bigger. It's just you're paying more people, more mouths to feed from that same kind of fixed pool. And I mean, it'll grow and expand based on ads and subscriptions and all that. But you're ultimately just trying to cut that pie up into more pieces. And if someone is out there, you know, juicing their numbers, as you say, like, they're taking more of that pie that should be going to everyone else who is a legitimate artist.
Let me just take a moment to tell you that last year, Music Ally launched a series of 5 free courses covering everything you need to know about Amazon Music for Artists, including programming and curation, selling artist merchandise, understanding voice technology, reaching audiences via Alexa, and live streaming on Twitch. Supported by Amazon Music, these courses are completely free to access. And now, thanks to Amazon's support, we are able to offer complimentary certification to any individual or company that completes all 5 of the courses. So what have you got to lose? Nothing, that's what, because they're free. You can find the link to the Amazon Music for Artists series in our show notes beneath the podcast. So you mentioned a minute ago, like auditing streaming numbers and patterns of behavior. How does that work? Does that work in the sense that you will look at it on, for example, a label by label basis, and they will say, hey, can you do this as part of our sort of agreement with you to sort of make sure everything's right? Or is it on a case by case basis?
It's just part of our day-to-day practice. I mean, CD Baby, we pay our artists every single week if they're over their pay point and they want to get paid weekly. And so we're constantly, you know, cranking through royalty reports from different DSPs. Like there's never a dull moment where we're like, we're done. We have nothing. There's always reports coming in. And so that's just part of our process. We go through literally every report and we look for outliers, for anomalous behavior. It's something, it's just part of what we do because it helps us maintain positive relationships with our artists and with our DSPs. Because we don't want to be the ones out there delivering a bunch of garbage. Like we try really hard to avoid that.
I'm trying to think of this with the main stakeholders here. You've got the DSPs who are supplying the reports, and then you've got rights holders who could be individuals or they could be someone holding a huge catalog. On the other hand, they want to get paid correctly, and the DSPs want to make sure that they're not being stolen from. So what's your relationship like with the DSPs in the sense of them supplying information to you, and is the sort of spotting fraud a two-way street? Do they say to you, hey, we think this is weird, and you say to them, we think this is weird?
Yeah, I mean, I would say in the last like 2 years or so, that two-way communication has improved immensely, because it used to be like we'd find something, we're like, oh, this doesn't look right, and we'd send it off to a DSP and we'd be like, feel like we're like shouting into a void. We're like, okay, we lobbed it over the fence and maybe we'll hear back, maybe we won't, probably we won't. But now I feel like everyone is finally starting to take this issue seriously, and so it has gotten a lot better. And with Music Fights Fraud, like that whole initiative is to foster that collaboration and communication, because it can't just be siloed in one part of the industry, because that's not going to benefit anyone. It's just going to be rinse and repeat doing the same thing over and over. So we get all the different pockets of the industry that are impacted by it all collaborating and communicating and speaking like the same language, it will be a lot easier to identify problems as they arise and hopefully put the kibosh on them.
Do you ever have to sort of say to them, hey, we're really sorry, but we've noticed that there's this suspicious behavior on this track or this artist, and what happens then? Do you say, look, we can't pay you out for this? Or how does that work practically?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely have those communications, and we just let them know, like, sorry, we're not going to work with you. We'll pull their content down so it stops monetizing on different platforms. And that's it. We're done. We, you know, because some DSPs will claw back those funds. And, you know, we pay weekly. And if we pay, you know, day one, 60, 90 days later, DSP is like, oh, I want that money back. If we pay that out, it's like, oh, okay, we're not in a good position. So it's pretty quick. We identify it, we shut it off. And that's
you have quite a short window then to identify fraud. If you strategically, you would say, right, they're paying out on a Friday, so we're going to like front load the week. Well, I'm going to shove all this fraud to the end of the week and hopefully they won't notice it. When you're looking at these instances of fraud, is it really obvious, or are the fraudsters getting sneakier in the sense of how they can make it work?
I will say yes to both of those.
Okay.
Sometimes, yeah, it's glaringly obvious. It's like, oh, yeah, you clearly weren't trying very hard. And then other times we're like, wow, points for creativity. And like you start to see the spider web of connected accounts. And it's like, okay, they're clearly thinking about it. So it's definitely, there's a spectrum, definitely.
Right. And do you think that, you mentioned machine learning that helps you spot these patterns. You know, we're entering into an age now where we're seeing, you know, it's impossible to have a conversation about anything without mentioning AI or machine learning. And the sort of the ways that we've seen those technologies being able to spot patterns that faster than humans. Is that something that you think you're going to lean on more, and it's going to be able to like help combat fraud?
Absolutely. It'll help. Well, it might not combat it in the sense of preventing it, because you know the consumption reports from DSPs, they get shared kind of in arrears. So it's like what happened in July gets reported a little bit after July. So it won't stop the behavior in the moment, but it will allow us to identify it and be like, okay, cool, it's not going to happen in September, kind of thing, because we'll have noticed it, identified it, and pulled it. And that's a tricky spot in terms of trying to prevent that content from getting out into the ecosystem in the first place, because these characters that have these intentions of, you know, basically ripping off DSPs and the industry in general, they want their transaction to go through on a CD Baby, on a TuneCore, on a DistroKid. Like, they want to look like the best customer in all the land and pass every single risk score, because they want to get over to Spotify or YouTube or wherever to generate their earnings and commit that, you know, streaming abuse. So
sure.
It's tricky because you can't necessarily measure intention on the front end. It's like, okay, yeah, they passed, they look good, it's a clean transaction. But you don't know, like, oh, they have a nefarious plan that they didn't share with us. So
I'm not asking you to name names here, of course, but is streaming fraud, where people try to increase numbers, is it purely something which is you wouldn't see on artists you would know? It's a sort of shadow network of fake artists or lower down artists that are sort of gaming the system. Has there been any sort of notable artists, or even like, you know, mid tier artists who you've spotted in this process and said, hey, this is fraud?
I mean, I don't have specifics that I can point to and be like, I know for a fact, but you know, just thinking about the story, it's like, oh, okay, I'm a band. I want to get past this threshold because I know at this level, you know, this A&R person will start to pay attention, or maybe I'm on a label. And if, you know, I want to make sure that I'm going to get all the support that I need from my label, maybe if I just tip over to this next tier, I'll get that support. So the motivation is definitely there. You know, I can't say without a doubt, like, oh yes, this happens.
Yeah.
Would not be surprised. Believable. It's like, for me, identifying fraud is always about like building that narrative. And it's like, if you can craft a story that's believable, that's a pretty good sign. Like, okay, yeah, this is legit, or, oh, this is not legit. It's like, if your story starts to crumble, maybe that can help you in the other direction.
So. Right, interesting. I mean, I do have some sympathy for artists who feel the need to dabble in, well, it is
absolutely
fraud, right? But it doesn't feel like it in some sense, because you think, look, I'm, you know, that idea of paying for attention and paying for access to a gatekeeper, it's very fluid there, isn't it? There's a point where, obviously, in this instance, it counts as fraud because, you know, you a play happens and money comes out, right? So that is literally fraud. But
yeah,
also, when you look at it in terms of, you know, you see how the music industry works, you say, well, if you pay this person, they'll give you access to this person, and then this might happen.
Right.
It's a very human behavior set, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, I don't think that there's people out there that are like, oh, this is some evil plan I'm concocting. It's like, no, they're trying to do like what they think is going to help them in their career. And it's like, I can't really fault someone for fighting for success. Maybe the methods and the means are don't get into that. But given like the pace at the pace at which the industry moves and like the hustle and grind and all of those things, it's like, can I fault them? Not really. Should they stop it? Absolutely.
Not doing fraud is a general good idea in business.
Yeah, it's a pretty safe rule to live by.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because obviously you look at the practices around marketing or promotion for an artist, and you can find readily some that are in a gray area. Fly posting is a complicated one, where in many cities it's illegal, or it's in a gray area, but
yep.
All artists I know who want to be seen as, want to either advertise or be seen as an artist that is at the level where they can afford fly posting will go and pay and do fly posting. I interviewed about a year ago the team from BeatDap, which is a streaming analysis company, and you probably know them. They said, that, based on their data and their research, they said that they think around 10% of streaming activity was fraud. Deezer recently, a couple of weeks ago, as part of their announcement of their partnership with Universal Media Group, Music Group, they said that about 7% was fraud on Deezer. Do you have any benchmark figures for how much of the streaming numbers is fraudulent?
For an industry total, no. I only have my perspective as CD Baby. I just have visibility into what we distribute, but I've seen that. I saw that report from Deezer. I've heard that number from the guys at BeatDap before. I would not be shocked if it was anywhere between 5% and 10%. Like that, right. That's believable. Especially, you think about how global and how easy it has become to consume music. I feel like the world's a big place. There's a lot of opportunity out there to generate some fake listens.
And if we peg it roughly between 5% to 10%, and then think about how much money goes into the music streaming ecosystem, this is a huge fraud when you aggregate it all out, isn't it?
It's massive, and it depends on how you're measuring that fraud. It's like, are you pegging that 5% to 10%? Is that on the number of streams? Is that based on the number of assets? Is that based on the number of user accounts involved? So like there's a number of different ways to look at it. It's fascinating. I'm not surprised that the music industry is now facing this. Fraud will go where there's opportunity. Lots of opportunity between the digital nature and the ease of consumption. It makes sense.
Yeah, I mean it is fascinating when you think about the let's put it at a 10% figure just for ease of use. But if you think that 10% of all money that is generated by streaming is leaching out of the system into the pockets of people who don't deserve it because they're cheating, that's a huge amount of money by any measurement. Do you think because of the scale of it and as the economics of streaming are changing, as you look ahead to the future of combating fraud from this perspective in streaming, do you think that it's going to become... the DSPs, as they grow, are going to say, right, this 10% is getting bigger in terms of the number, the million-dollar number on it. So is it going to become a bigger focus for them to try and squeeze it as much as possible?
Absolutely. I mean, if I had a 10% leak on my profits, I would be like, shit, how am I going to solve this? But, with Music Fights Fraud, hopefully we can work together to get that down. I think the industry, we have the industry's attention right now, and there's a lot of companies from different parts of the ecosystem that are excited to participate in Music Fights Fraud and start sharing information and working to kind of clamp down and get that number a lot smaller.
from that perspective, then, again, looking forwards, with all those partners you're talking about from all the different stakeholders in that, what would, are there any things that you would like to see in those connections, anything you'd like to improve on those connections in terms of sharing information or something that would really help you detect and eradicate fraud better?
Yeah, I mean, we're just getting started. So I feel like we've got a wealth of opportunity in front of us. But I think just even just coming up with some really simple metrics and information that we can start sharing, that will go such a long way. You know, it's like the problem as a whole hasn't been tackled yet. And that makes it look like we're doing, well, it doesn't make it look like we're doing that. We can do a lot with even some pretty small changes and just collaborating. Like those early pieces of information that we share, that early collaboration, I think will be extremely impactful. There'll be a minute where we're like patting ourselves on the back. We're like, we've done an amazing job. It's great. And then it'll be quiet and calm. And then the next wave will come in of like, okay, right, now the fraudsters have come up with some new creative thing, and that's what we have to focus on. But we'll have that framework in place to collaborate, and we'll be able to identify that and hopefully tamp it down a lot sooner. It shouldn't take, you know, this massive groundswell of attention of like, oh shit, we're losing 10% of profit. Like, no, that should be a thing of the past, I hope.
So as ever, transparency and sharing is good in this instance. I will put a link to Music Fights Fraud beneath the podcast for people to investigate a little bit further. To wrap things up, Christine, we've talked a lot about fraud and you know and around music, but I want to talk about music as a final question. If you could pick one piece of music to listen to for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Oh my God, I was not prepared for that question.
No, but that's the point, isn't it? It kind of, we get gut responses then. But I mean, what would it be? Like something, it could be an album, it could be a song.
It is from the Jeff Buckley album, The Sketches for My Sweetheart the Drunk, and Morning Theft, that's the song.
Okay, and why that one in particular?
I have very vivid memories of going through a very challenging breakup at one point and just laying on the floor and listening to that album, like staring at the ceiling. And that particular song, just like, it just opened up a new pathway for me in my thinking and understanding of things. And it was just like, I genuinely felt peace, like just in the moment.
Like and an ocean of serenity. Wow, that's so a genuinely life-changing song for you there. That's something.
That was a big one. That and the first thing that popped into my head though was Mozart's Requiem. Like,
okay.
I don't know if I could do that for the rest of my life though. I feel like
you perhaps don't want to listen to one song over and over again in your life, which of course would count as fraud if you viewed it from your metric perspective.
True. Of course, yeah. Very suspicious behavior.
There you go. Well, I'll link to both of those beneath the podcast, and people can check them out for themselves and see if they can also find their inner peace with those two pieces of music. Anyway, Christine Barnum, CD Baby's Chief Revenue Officer, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And there we are. Thanks again to Christine for joining me. If you found that podcast useful, please share it on with someone else who you think will get something out of it. And if you want to get in touch with me, I would love to hear from you. So please email me on joe@musically.com. We also have a free weekly email called The Knowledge, which rounds up bits and pieces of all the best analysis, news, marketing insight, and skills from Music Ally's wide range of industry-leading sources. So sign up and impress your friends. Links are in the description, as well as to the things that Christine mentioned, as always. So that's it. Thanks for listening. As ever, I've been Music Ally's editor, Joe Sparrow. You have been you. And until next time, farewell.